Let the good times roll. And I want these words to make things right, but it's the wrongs that make the words come to life.
You just have to sit back and see what happens. You don't know anything for sure. And I hope Gabby's here. He's been great to me. He's really got me to this point and pushed me and made me a better player to get to this point. I love him. He's like family to me now. And yeah, I hope he stays and we, you know, continue our career together.
Those are the words of Lane Taylor talking about James Camp and the offensive line coach, hoping that he is going to be back in 2019. Back in 2019 is going to be the last couple of our huddle shows that are coming up. This Thursday night, going to be out at Maddie's Bar and Grill, College Avenue in New Berlin. Come on out and say hello. We're going to be out there 6 to 8 this Thursday night. It's all brought to you by our friends at Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network. Really looking forward to it. We got the NFC and AFC championship games coming up. You've got coaches being hired and let go in Green Bay as the team begins to take shape this offseason. To talk more about it, Mike Clemens, our Green and Gold insider, joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Michael, how you been, buddy?
Pretty good. A lot of transition continues on in Green Bay with the coaching staff.
Yeah, it's been interesting because obviously Mike Pettine stays. Some of the guys you thought might stick around, Joe Witt Jr. getting him a kind of a good housekeeping seal of endorsement, if you will, from Charles Woodson when he was cut loose. But any other surprises on this staff for you?
Well, no, not really. It's apparent that with Joe Philbin interviewing for the offensive line coach with the Vikings and Mike Zimmer last week, that meant that all bets were off. You know, Matt LaFleur was going to come in and make changes on the offense. Guys weren't going to wait around to find out what was going on. And so James Campen goes to talk to the Browns, and Freddie Kitchens gets the job on Friday. And Campen, who, you know, was a player with the Packers for 5 years as a center, he was Brett Favre's first center back in 92. He actually played with John Dorsey, with Dorsey's last year as a linebacker. Now, of course, Dorsey is the general manager of the Browns after 20 years in the personnel department, Ron Wolf and Ted Thompson. He goes and talks to Freddie Kitchens. And, you know, James Campen, kind of, when you talk to him, he's a little bit like Andy Reid. You know, he's a guy that maybe he had some aspirations of being a head coach at some time, but he's been very loyal to Mike McCarthy all these years. And so they make him associate head coach and offensive line coach of the Cleveland Browns.
Right. I hated to see him go. This was one of the guys you and I talked about with John Dodd only a couple of weeks ago when we were saying, hey, if there's going to be anybody you want to keep around, you wanted to keep Mike Pettine, you wanted to keep James Campen, a guy that's kind of been through the trenches. And in addition to that, he's taken some of the younger guys and made them better. You remember some of the guys that are there right now, Lane Taylor, obviously David Bakhtiari, certainly Corey Linsley. I mean, even Brian Bulaga to a certain extent. All of those guys have excelled under Campen's tutelage.
You know, and this is a year where you got Lucas Patrick out there, and you know, Byron Bell, the veteran they brought in right guard, he goes down with an injury. So you've got these guys playing positions that they're not used to. And Lane Taylor, we asked him on locker cleaning day, you know, how much people wonder if maybe there's something wrong with the strength and conditioning of the Packers. Do you point the finger at that?
Yeah, people love to like point the finger at the strength program and say it's not good enough and whatnot. But I've done the strength program for 6 years now, and I've been pretty, and knock on wood, you know, solid. So, you know, just there's things with football you can't avoid, and stuff happens, and it's just the game.
He's right. I mean, Mike, when you're talking about strains and pulls, that's one thing. But when you're talking about guys with badly sprained upper ankles, and you're looking at guys with broken bones, such as a guy like the Muhammad Wilkerson who they brought in. I mean, you can't prevent those.
With all the cameras they have, it's just still crazy in the trenches. Guys are rolling around, legs are up in the air. You get rolled up on. You know, it's a tough sport, particularly with the guys that are on the offensive line. David Bakhtiari is a guy that's a fourth round pick that showed early in camp he could keep anybody on one on ones. Off the quarterback, including even Clay Matthews. And David was asked at the end of the season in an interview with our station about James Campen.
Now, Campy is as advertised. I've said on the show before, and I'll say it again, he's probably the best O-line coach in the league. I fully intend on working and hope that every other man that I'm going to go out there with is working as well.
pretty big statement. James Campen talked about Mike when he was discussing the linemen. I mean, granted, you can say there were some failures because Jason Spriggs has never developed. Some of the guys that you talked about, a guy like Byron Bell, who was really going to come in and be the cog there, it didn't really work out that well for him. But James Campen was really big on trying to teach everybody all the positions so they were never caught shorthanded.
He was. And, you know, you want to promise everybody the moon and the stars. Justin McCray's done a pretty good job from time to time having to play left guard, right guard, left tackle, you know, whatever it is. But in reality, when you're trying to bring along a second-round pick like Jason Spriggs, you want to have an identity for the guy. You don't want to get too crazy, particularly with a younger offensive line. And Campen was honest about that factor, too.
You know, it's always you sit down with coach, you know, where – he would like to see the guys, and we, you know, have conversations about it daily. And then, obviously, prior to the first OTAs and whatnot, you know, I think, you know, sometimes it's better off to leave a guy, a young guy, at one spot, you know. And I think it's just the makeup of the kid, and you know what he can handle. And a lot of times, it's not just the mental part or the concept or the play or the structure of the play you're looking for. It's more, can he handle going from a right to left-handed stance? Can he handle, you know, with a staggered stance from a tackle to a guard? And I think there's a fine line between saying that this person can do a lot of different things. It takes a unique person that can do that. Of course, everybody would love to have a bunch of those guys, but we generally try to keep them on, keep them in two positions if we can. But some guys need to be in one, you know. And so, again, that goes back to what coach ultimately looks at and sees it all and has a conversation with him, and then we move on from that standpoint.
Hey, Mike, when you had mentioned, you know, James Campen kind of seeing what's going on inside Green Bay, inside the walls there, and moves over to Cleveland, do you think the Packers move too slow, or do you think that they're just, other than a few key people, they're pretty much cleaning house?
No, part of this thing is you got to wait for people to actually get in the chair. You got to, you know, Mark Murphy and Brian Gutekunst, they got an idea they're candidates, but it's not that you actually sit down with these guys face-to-face, and LaFleur seems to stand out and be the best fit for you. I mean, you have to have these meetings and face-to-face. But, you know, I think it's just playing out in a certain way. Once LaFleur gets in and he talks to these guys and, you know, he can get on the inside. I also think, though, there are things going on where maybe the personnel department has thought for years there are certain players that they've put on that roster that haven't been developed. In the meantime, Campen is like, look, I've been here since 2004. I've been through Sherman. I've been through McCarthy. And it's probably best for his family to move on, let somebody else do it. So, you know, 11, 13, 15 years for the same thing, unheard of in the NFL. So it's probably best for Campen to just move on, too. But that means the board is wide open for LaFleur to have to fill up that staff on offense.
Do you like the moves that he's made so far?
You know, I'll let you know when I see who's coming in. I just know that the negative is, I mean, it's always good to have a fresh voice for Bakhtiari and those guys, but that's an awful lot of NFC North experience going out the window, man. That's an awful lot of experience going out the window.
I know it's a little early, but let's do this. Let's come back because I want to get into the Joe Witt Jr. thing. We'll move over to the defensive side of the football. I want to talk about that and about the defensive backs and the fact that a guy like Charles Woodson speaks up and says he wants to personally vouch for Joe Witt Jr. and get him a job somewhere, and Joe Witt Jr. wants to also become a defensive coordinator at some point. I want to get into all of that discussion. Reminder that we are going to be heading, Mike is going to be joining us, we're going to be heading down to the Super Bowl this year and really looking forward to it, taken down there by our friends from Coaches Pub and Grill, home of the Big Boy Burger with great specials, awesome fish fry, sports on the TVs, great service as well. Say hi to Cornet and his whole staff. South 13th Street in Milwaukee, that is Coaches Pub and Grill, and if you're looking for some of the best pizza you're ever going to eat, our friends at San Giorgio, the gourmet Napoletana Pizzeria, Old World 3rd Street in Milwaukee, right next to the Calderon Club on Kilbourne. If you're going to go out for a great night, make it a great night at San Giorgio. Say hi to Gino. Just got the knee replacement, I know, so he's probably hobbling around a little bit. Be careful. Don't knock him over, but say hi to him. Maybe help him out a little bit. Go make your own pizza, for that matter. And it's paired with Cider Boys. They pair it up with Cider Boys, the Bill Michaels down at San Giorgio, from Point Brewing. Go to pointbeer.com to find out more information about that. Also, Usinger's, whether it's from the deli or the cheeses, they have everything. Party boxes, pit samplers. If you're going to have a big Super Bowl party, this is the way to go. Just get the Northern Comfort or the Old World Medley. Put out the whole tray for everybody coming over. Usinger's has something for everyone and every gathering. Go to Usinger, U-S-I-N-G-E-R, Usinger.com. Mike Clemens joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. We're going to come back and talk a little bit about Joe Witt Jr. And now he's looking for a job as well out of the Green Bay Packers coaching staff. More of the Bill Michaels Show next.
Wisconsin-wide, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
I look at it like this. When things aren't going your way, and if you panic at that time, you're definitely going to lose. All right? You're definitely going to fail with whatever it is. If it's a test, if whatever it is, you're not going to be successful. When things aren't going your way, that's the time you got to refocus and look at, what do I do best, okay? Where are my strengths? And let me make sure I'm capitalizing on that and make sure I'm in the moment. I'm gonna bet on me. I'm gonna bet on the situation that I can get it done. And then if I don't get it done, I'll go back and evaluate why I came up short. When you're in the moment, that's not the time to panic. That's the time to step up and say, hey, I'm the guy to get it done. And that's what we need. We need somebody to step up and say, hey, I'm that guy. I don't care who it is. Somebody needs to do it. When you get on the field, nothing else matters. You gotta play. So if you don't feel that you're capable of putting a winning performance, don't be on the field.
Those are the words of Joe Witt Jr. Welcome back to the program. I'm Bill Michaels. Mike Clemens from NFL Sirius Radio joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. And Mike, Joe Witt Jr. was a guy that we love to get a soundbite from. He's very frank, very honest. And for a lot of guys in that secondary, they swear by him. So he is now out of work, but he wants to become a defensive coordinator. I wonder if he's going to get that opportunity.
Well, I sure hope so, because Joe Witt is from Auburn, Alabama, played for the Auburn Tigers. His dad's been a linebackers coach there, played wide receiver some in college, got injured, came in and started coaching not long after that, switched over to the defensive side, has been with the Packers since 2006. By 2007, he's coaching up these guys. And by 2010... you got a great team, but you need some help on the corners. And so you got two undrafted guys, Tremont Williams, who he developed, and then they bring in Sam Shields, this wide receiver from Miami with great speed, and he converts him into a cornerback in the OTAs and minicamps. Shields ends up starting, and they win a Super Bowl with those two guys. I mean, that's where Joe Witt really made his mark. And he's got this very honest voice. I think he's got the voice of a defensive coordinator. Who knows, maybe someday a head coach in the NFL. But I was concerned about Joe when an incident happened. What was that, week two at Green Bay? Packers are hosting the Vikings. And the Vikings come back with about 21 points in the fourth quarter. Remember, that ends up being the tie game.
Right.
Adam Thiel, the big wide receiver there, is going down the right-hand sidelines toward the pylon, and he's got Jair Alexander in coverage underneath, and Kentrell Bryce, safety who they believed in, who could put a thumping on guys, is coming out of the end zone. And Thiel gets the ball, and you wonder, when you look at the tape, well, why didn't Kentrell Bryce's safety drill him? Just drill him in the chest to disrupt the catch and prevent a touchdown. And here's what Joe Witt had to say after the game.
Cousins, pressure, hit as he throws, going for Thielen. He's got it! Waiting for a single touchdown!
Look at the concentration of Adam Thielen, 19, in between two Packers, ball's bobbling, takes it to his body, and goes into the end zone.
Well, I think if you watch NFL football today, and if you're in KB's position, if he goes and separates the receiver from the ball, what's probably going to happen? It's probably going to be a fine. He's already been fined one time. I think that's flashing through a lot of DBs' minds. I'm watching film against Washington, and their tight end catches the ball up the seam against, I forgot who it was, maybe Arizona. The guy hit him. He gets flagged for it. The only way he could have hit him is the way he hit him, and he probably got fined for it as well. So it's difficult when a guy's lowering his body, going for the ball, he's trying to make a football play, for you to make a football play, and you know that you're going to lose a lot of money and get a penalty at the same time if you complete that play. So that's just the reality of today's football.
Very honest statement. It's the truth. But when he said that, I thought, I don't know how that's going to play upstairs.
Yeah, he's not wrong, because we had seen Clay Matthews obviously get a penalty flag thrown for an absolutely picture-perfect tackle. You know, I mean, you grab, you head off to the side, shoulder in the gut, lift the legs, take him out from underneath him, and take him to the ground. And that's the way you're taught. And he did it, and he got flagged for it. And he's right, but I agreed with you at the time, because it's almost as if he's saying you should care more about your money than making a play.
Well, you know, he's trying to express the reality of what these players are going through. However, you know, when your manager upstairs is like, well, that's not how you manage players. You can't be saying that publicly or even privately to the players. You've got to coach players to be physical and let the chips fall where they may. But that's the problem with the level of the rules and the level of the fines that the NFL levels every week for 17 weeks during the regular season. It's ridiculous.
So did you enjoy the divisional games over the weekend?
I sure did. I was surprised at the amount of blowouts through most of the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, usually these things go where in the divisional weekend, the average is three of the home teams win, one of them loses. But, you know, we had a clean sweep. So you got the Chiefs in the cold with 6 inches of snow down there playing against the Colts. And, you know, who thought the Colts were going to come out that flat?
Mm-hmm.
And as for the Chiefs, I was impressed by the Chiefs, by the fact that, you know, I mean, losing Kareem Hunt, that was huge. And yet they still found ways to get it done. Spencer Ware, he goes out with a hamstring. And then they bring in Damian Williams, and he rushes for 129 yards in this thing, particularly toward the end of the game. You talk to Eric Ebron after the game about how come the Colts were just so flat in the first half.
Started off way too slow. Started off way too slow for a team that we knew had firepower. Offensively, we just didn't play our game. I mean, come on now. We were first and third downs. I don't think we converted any today. I mean, it was not our day.
They get a run and then get a holding call, you mm-hmm. know, and couldn't get a first down until just before the 2-minute warning. Horrible display by the Chiefs or by the Colts. The Chiefs look dominant. Patrick Mahomes, of course, he's just all over the field. Making great plays, and he talked about one of the things that gave him a lot of confidence coming out of this first playoff game for himself is the fact that they could control the game in the fourth quarter with on the ground.
I think my favorite thing was finishing the game at the end. We've been in those situations this year, and I feel like we haven't executed to our standard. And for us to go out there and finish that game with those big runs, especially that last one, I mean, it shows the attitude and effort that you'll need in order to win football games.
I more and more I like Patrick Mahomes and what he has to say, and just in listening to him, I know Chris Collinsworth made reference to it. He said that's becoming fast the new face of the NFL.
The moment doesn't seem too big for the kid.
Nope.
At 23 years old.
Yep. No, I completely agree. He just seems to have ice water in his veins. He actually seems to thrive on the big moment, where a lot of guys will get a little nervous. Maybe the stage gets a little big. He actually seems to thrive on it. What else did you like?
Well, then next, you know, came up the Rams and the Cowboys game. And, you get about halfway through that game, and it wasn't the razzle-dazzle plays that the Rams were pulling off. It was the running game. It was five big dudes on the offensive line just drilling the Cowboys. And the Cowboys have had a good defensive line and good a linebacker, too. To me, that looks like an NFC game, a team that is, can go all the way to the Super Bowl and can control the game, even with all the weapons that they've got, and as well as Sean McVay can move things around. It was the running game. C.J. Anderson is a guy that they picked up from the Raiders in December. Anybody could have picked this guy up, and he's drilling guys up the middle. And Jason Garrett said after the loss, yeah, that's where they lost the game.
We just didn't do a good enough job controlling the line of scrimmage, winning our gaps, and tackling. And unfortunately for us, they were able to run the ball consistently throughout the ball game. They controlled the pace and the tempo of the game really because of that.
I tell you, Mike, I like Jason Garrett as a head coach. I mean, I know he has to put up with a lot with Jerry Jones looking over his shoulder, and he's not always had the best talent. But from where they were to where he kind of, you know, put them all back together and got them into the postseason and then ultimately getting themselves a wild card weekend win, I think Jason Garrett is kind of an underrated coach.
No, I think he's really grown. I think he's pretty solid. I watched some of the adjustments he was trying to make in game and the way he was reacting to things. And, you know, he's pretty good at the podium, too, in terms of a voice for the team. He's going to figure out if Jerry gives him enough time and the way they've made some moves on that defense and the way the Cowboys have actually drafted the last 3 or 4 years now. I think he could still – if Jerry ought to hang on to this guy, because at some point Jason Garrett's going to figure it out and get him into a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I just wonder if he's going to get enough time. I know there's a lot of people clamoring for his head in Dallas right now just because they've been there, done that. But remember, they had not gotten a postseason win in for a long time, and then finally they're winning now in the postseason as to just getting a couple more pieces. Remember, this year they lost Jason Witten, so they didn't have Jason Witten out there, that big tight end that's been a go-to guy. And finally, you know, Zeke Elliott's completely healthy, and he had a really solid season. Dak Prescott's got another year of seasoning. The defense is starting to come on. Give him another year and a couple
and
more
Amari,
pieces.
And Amari Cooper. They Amari bring, Cooper. They bring him in, and he made a big difference.
Yep.
I mean, he started winning games for them. They went through the whole Dez Bryant, you know, drama, and they ended up being smart. That came out on top with that. So then it's yesterday morning, and it's about 16 degrees in Foxborough, and your Los Angeles Chargers fly all the way out there for a second week, you know, after having to go out to Baltimore the week before. I guess that can be part of the factor, but, I mean, the Chargers come out like a flat tire, and the Patriots are just unbelievable with the execution on the plays, and everybody seems to know their assignment. And Hub Arkish is doing the sidelines for Westwood One on that one as the Patriots roll it up to 35-7 just at the halftime. And Hub says, I got to tell you, where is Joey Bosa here? And he goes, he's lining up over the left tackle, Trent Brown, and this guy has got him completely figured out. Bosa's not getting anywhere on this guy. He's got every hand technique down on him. He's blocking him. And I started watching that. I was like, he was absolutely right. I mean, they just shut down any one of their weapons. It was just perfect game plan. Perfect execution, Belichick at his best, Brady at his best, and a guy that people think might be a coach of the year for the Chargers, Anthony Lynn, talked about being bought down 35-7 at the half.
We dug ourselves in the hole in the first half, but the guys came out the second half, competed hard. It was a little too late. We didn't play our best game today for whatever reason, but like I said, I take my hat off to New England. They've been here before, they've done it, and they showed up today.
I think Phillip Rivers still had a tremendous season. I mean, I know that Tom Brady and Bill Belichick lived on the everybody else thinks we suck mantra, but I think Phillip Rivers had a hell of a year this year.
I did too, you know, and I was kind of hoping that he would be a story that would be in the Super Bowl, you know, a great family guy, a competitor all these years. People thought that this might finally be the year for the Chargers. But Phillip Rivers, too, he was pretty honest about what happened to the Chargers in Foxborough yesterday?
They just played better. I don't know that it had anything to do with the extra week. They played better. I don't know that they did a ton of stuff defensively that surprised us. That first drive, like I said, we answered and scored, and we did some things. You know, it seems like we got to midfield every possession in that first half, just about. And they scored again, and we didn't answer, and they scored again, and we didn't answer, and scored again, and we didn't answer. I mean, you know, we needed to, you know, and we knew. We knew offensively that our defense was going to settle in, you know, and they needed us. And we didn't hold up our end offensively. And
let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll kind of wrap things up, talk about the Saints comeback to beat the Eagles, also the AFC and the NFC Championship games. Mike Clements from NFL Sirius Radio joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Final segment of the Bill Michaels Show coming up next.
You're listening to the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Bill Michaels Show on the air, final segment as we sit here and chat with our Green and Gold insider, Mike Clements, joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. And Mike, boy, the Saints, it's interesting because I'm watching a team that, you know, between Sean Payton and Drew Brees, those guys have the utmost respect for one another. They continue to just kind of trudge on. Meanwhile, the guys were kind of hired the same time, so to speak, in Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy. They have had the split. It is a new era of Packer football, and yet the Saints seem to have been able to wrap their arms around the organization after a couple of 7-9 seasons and put it all right back on track, and now they find themselves in an NFC Championship game. So, oh, how times have changed, huh?
And, you know, I've been talking with the listeners about Taysom Hill.
Yeah.
We're in training camp, actually all the way through OTAs and minicamp, and we're watching these backup quarterbacks, Brett Hundley and Hill, a couple of other guys are out there. And when we get to training camp, and there was a game against the Redskins, when Taysom Hill gets his chance with the ball, it's a spark. Anybody could see this. When this guy got into the huddle, things happened. He ran with the football. He flipped the football and made some passes. But there was a spark to the guy that you just don't see in the practice setting during minicamps or even during training camp. They get to the end, and we think, well, they got to keep this guy. He was the best spark. He was the most exciting thing to watch in the preseason. And Ted waves him, thinking, I can sneak him out of the practice squad. Sean Payton told us in a conference call a few months later, I was actually looking at the Packers with all those wide receivers you guys have got. We were short at wide receiver. And I was looking at the receivers, and all of a sudden I saw this Taysom Hill guy. I went, are you kidding me? And the minute I saw he was free, scooped him up. And he brought him to New Orleans and said, you know what? He's not bad as a quarterback, but look how athletic he is. Made him a gunner. He's making him a slot receiver. He's an athletic football player that can help you out on offense and special teams. And I say to people, this is why Ted Thompson is no longer the general manager. It's decisions like Taysom Hill, why he's not doing it. And it's a coach like Mike McCarthy not saying, hey, God, this guy's jumping off the screen in the preseason. I don't feel good about him being nudging out Brett Hundley, but he's a football player. Like Jeff Janis was, maybe there's something we can find some use for this guy besides just being a quarterback, and he should have been fighting for that guy and making use of him. And so in the meantime, the Saints are down 14-0. They come out trying to take the ball deep right away on the Eagles, and Drew Brees throws a pick. And Foles, and they score quickly, and the Eagles go up 14-0. And Sean Payton, masterful job of turning that thing around. He goes for the fake punt, even like from his own 35. He's going for it on fourth down to swing that momentum, to chip away and chip away, and he gets the lead. They get into the second half, and then they put on an 18-play, 11.5-minute drive to go up a field goal. And then the Eagles came back with that. Maybe there's 5 minutes left in the game, and they were 3-and-out. And right then, I knew the Eagles were done. You've got to respond when your defense has been on the field that long. And Drew Brees talked about how that 18-play, 11.5-minute drive went in the fourth quarter.
We actually gained 117 yards on that drive. I'm not sure if that's a record because of the penalties that kept setting us back. And so, yeah, we went on 117-yard drive in the third quarter to take the lead and then really didn't look back.
I agree with you, though. The tide turned on that fake punt when they used Taysom Hill as the guy that ran the ball right up the gut and picked up the first down.
Absolutely. And injuries, too. Sheldon Rankins is a first-round pick for the Saints. Achilles, he's done. They had to cart him off. Brandon Brooks from Milwaukee, he plays guard for the Eagles. He had to leave the game. Michael Bennett was out off the field. Fletcher Cox, that really hurt the Eagles, too, in stopping Ingram and Kamara at points later in that game. And then, of course, Nick Foles, though, he gets the ball. 2 minutes left. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he didn't stop for the two-minute warning, but he's driving down the field. He's getting into toward the red zone. Alshon Jeffery comes off from the left-hand side, little skinny post, and the ball goes right through his hands. Jeffries has got good hands. Alshon Jeffery is a weird dude. You know, last year at the Super Bowl, he had a Go camera. He was recording every interview he did, so his words weren't taken out of context.
Right.
I'd never seen that before. But I'll give it to Alshon Jeffery. He put his hand up and said, yeah, this game is on me because they got the interception.
Play I didn't make. I mean, it went through my hands. I mean, if we need to catch the ball, I got to make that play. That's on me. I'll take that loss. That's on me. Got all my teammates down. City of Philadelphia, that's on me. I'll take that.
The Saints, Marshawn Lattimore says bingo for the second time, gets a pick off of Nick Foles, and the Saints are able to take a victory formation.
You could see Alshon Jeffery walking off the field in that game. He looked like he wanted to burst into tears.
Yeah, he was crushed,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. I mean, he was like just stone-faced walking through. Guys patting him on the head saying, don't worry about it. You know, it happens, whatever. But he'd had none of it. So I give him all the credit. Mike, I'm looking forward to the Super Bowl, man. They finally confirmed Maroon 5 is going to be the halftime act. We're going to get the chance to cover that as well. So that should be some good stuff.
That'd be fine. In the meantime, Packers are interviewing more candidates at offensive coordinator, wide receivers coach. Is talking to the guy from the Jets on that. So, you know, plenty of Packers stories to cover each day for the next couple of weeks until Matt LaFleur gets his staff together.
Good stuff, pal. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thank you, guys.
Talk to you. There you go. Mike Clemens, our Green and Gold insider, joining us for a couple of minutes on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Schneider hiring drivers right now. You work hard. They treat you fair. 80-plus years they've been getting it done. Call them 844-PRIDE or go to schneiderjobs.com. This just in, Marcus Howard of Marquette earns his fourth Big East weekly honor. That's right. He's been named the Big East Player of the Week, according to the league office, letting it go today. His fourth of the season, as a matter of fact. He earned the conference's top freshman award on three occasions in 2016-2017. Former Creighton standout Doug McDermott holds the single-season weekly honor record with 8. But a nice week by Howard. His week was highlighted by the 53-point effort in the overtime win at Creighton, which set a new Big East and Marquette single-game record. He's the only collegiate player in the last 20 years to have a 50-point game, to have a couple of 50-point games. He scored 52 in 2017-2018 in an overtime win at Providence. So there you go. Nice accolades. Time for us to go. Have a good one. We'll be back at it again tomorrow. Until then, see you.
To Border, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.